This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. So Barack Obama is the president-elect of the United States. Amazing. But it's been a few days, so let me be a buzzkill. Just look at what the guy has on his plate just on the international front. An angry Russia still loaded with nuclear weapons, the threat of a nuclearized Iran, and the always hovering fear of terrorists getting a nuke. And at home, a giant long-term energy problem for which the magic bullet just might be nuclear power. In the campaign that just ended, nuclear power was back on the political map in a big way.
We've been sailing Navy ships around the world for 50 years with nuclear power plants on it. I have news for Senator Obama. Nuclear power is safe. We ought to do it now.
Contrary to what Senator McCain keeps on saying, I favor nuclear power as one component of our overall energy mix.
Wow. So our new liberal Democratic president is pro-nuke. What a shock to anybody who remembers just one generation back to the heyday of nuclear fear that peaked during Ronald Reagan's first term.
Okay, Kimberly, we're rolling anytime.
Hello, this is Kimberly Wells, and I'm here at the Ventana Nuclear Power Plant, owned and operated by California Gas and Electric.
In March of 1979, the China Syndrome was released with Jane Fonda and Michael Douglas. It showed a fictional accident at a nuclear power plant and a conspiracy to cover up the danger.
Somebody turn off the goddamn alarm.
System status.
Reactor pressure back to normal.
Jack, we still have high radiation on level 8.
Perfectly normal.
And then, less than 2 weeks after the movie came out, the real deal happened in Pennsylvania.
The Metropolitan Edison Company has informed us that there has been an incident at Three Mile Island, Unit Number 2.
The worst nuclear accident in America's history. Talk about life imitating art. Today, we're looking at the legacy of the nuclear culture of the early 80s, when it seemed like the possibility of nuclear disaster in war or peace was on everybody's mind all the time.
My primary concern in coming here this afternoon has been to learn as much as I possibly can as president about the problems at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant.
It was a national disaster that the whole country went through. It was very dramatic. I know I'd stayed on my television over that weekend after the accident and watched Jimmy Carter go into the Three Mile Island, and it was very frightening.
That's Dr. Robert DuPont. He's a psychiatrist based in Washington, D.C., who had worked in the Ford and Carter administrations. In 1984, DuPont got a grant from the Department of Energy to study the fear of nuclear power among the American public.
The term of art at the time was phobia, and people were interested in the question of could you use the knowledge that had come from studying anxiety disorders to understand the fear of nuclear power.
So these were proponents of nuclear power who basically wanted to redefine fear of it as a disease?
Not as a disease. That was we were very careful about that, although that became a very, very big issue.
I can imagine.
That was in the days, this was 1984, when networks were so dominant, and they had film crews outside my office, and my kids were made fun of at school. My wife was embarrassed in her job. I developed my own phobia of the nuclear phobia issue, and it was very dramatic. And I think that it was a what-if fear. It was what almost happened, what could have happened, what may happen in the future.
But when Three Mile Island happened, and it was almost essentially simultaneously with the movie The China Syndrome coming out,
yes,
did that feed this sort of ambient anxiety about nuclear power?
Yes, I think it was very important. It gave it legitimacy.
What are you talking about, Nick? You got to put it on the air. I photographed an accident. An accident in a nuclear power plant.
I don't know that accident is the right word.
Accident is the right word.
There was radiation release. There's no doubt about that. But it was biologically trivial. That was at the peak of the anti-authority, anti-establishment kind of attitudes, you know, following hard on the 60s and the 70s when that was very much part of the culture. And I think people just had the feeling that they're not telling us the truth. If we only knew what was going on.
Don, I know what you're saying. But if you'd been there, it'd be hard to believe there wasn't any danger at all. I mean, maybe we should show it to an expert and get an objective opinion.
Kimberly, the film stays in the vault.
This is all a goddamn cover-up. Now, Kimberly, she telephones me last night, says she sees you talking to their PR guy, Gibson.
That's right. I told him we've got the film, and the film stays in the vault.
So it's a conspiracy, then?
It is not a conspiracy. It is not a cover-up.
When I went to visit it in 1980, I went with our daughter, who was then 17 years old, and my wife was concerned that neither of us would come back alive. Few Americans have any contact with nuclear power plants.
Right.
They're situated away from population centers, and that makes them very alien to people's experience in this country, whereas in Canada, Toronto has nuclear power plants practically within the city limits.
No, the only employee of a nuclear power plant that most Americans know probably is Homer Simpson.
Right, exactly.
15 seconds to core meltdown.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe. If he hollered, let him go. Eeny, meeny, miny,
bah. Crisis has been averted. Everything is super.
The public had this tremendous fear of nuclear power. But the problem in the plants was the employees had no fear.
Really?
I mean, zero. So that the companies, the operators, had to instill concern, instill worry, because they were too casual about it. So there you had an example of where the familiarity was actually undermining vigilance that was important to a situation that actually is risky, at least somewhat risky.
That's fascinating. So it was exactly 180 degrees from the outsized fear on the outside.
And it had to do with that familiarity. It was so routine. Nothing is happening. It's like watching grass grow. I mean, it is just the most boring place you've ever been in your life. And this was very hard for my wife to accept that when I came back with our daughter. And I said, well, we were sort of there. We went through the plant. We looked at all this stuff that was there. And well, what was that like? Well, you know, nothing.
Now, around this same time, apart from the nuclear power anxiety. Yeah. We had nuclear war anxiety reaching a kind of high water mark. Do you remember, again, around this same early 80s time, that television movie that got such an audience and so much attention called The Day After about a nuclear attack on Kansas City?
Yes, I do. And the message of the movie really had to do with radiation. It wasn't about the blast. It was about the radiation and turning the country into a wasteland.
See?
No, it only looks that way.
The movie The Day After made a very big point about the fact that you couldn't see it, you couldn't hear it, you couldn't touch it.
You can't feel it, and you can't taste it. But it's here, right now, all around us. It's going through you. Like an X-ray, right into your cells. What do you think killed all these animals?
But I think that movie was really about the experience being out of ordinary people's control. It was about a threat that was imposed from outside, and I think it could be quite frightening. It was designed, I think, to be frightening.
Well, that's interesting because I grew up in Omaha, right a few miles from the Strategic Air Command, and as soon as I was able to understand anything, I thought, and this is in 1962 at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, I thought, oh, we live right next to where the Russians will attack. And so I lived with that, but I wasn't a doctor. I wasn't saddled with fear about that. But I do think kind of generationally maybe or in a cultural sense, it did affect our sense of what the hell humor about life maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Even though I wasn't terrified of being incinerated, exactly.
I would say one of the reasons you weren't terrified of being incinerated is because it was so familiar. And you'd know people who were involved in it.
Yeah.
It was part of the fabric of the community. And I think that's reassuring.
So you're about trying to make the actual basis of any given fear correlate in a reality-based way with the fear we have of it.
That's right. And what I'm concerned about is that there's been a mixing of concern about nuclear war and about fears of radiation with what we now have a 50-year experience with the nuclear power. It's much less common in my experience with younger people. When I mentioned that I was going to do this interview with my 15-year-old grandson, he said, "What's Three Mile Island?" He'd never heard of Chernobyl. It didn't mean anything to him.
So the whatever generation, I guess, will bring us closer to nuclear power.
I don't know about that, but I think it does change the dynamic.
Thank you very much.
Kurt, it's a pleasure.
We live in a world of tension and conflict. Even under the heaviest possible attack, we can survive.
Dr. Robert DuPont has studied the nuclear fears of Americans, and he worked in the Ford and Carter administrations. He practices psychiatry in Washington, D.C. Coming up...
You're going to be designing and decorating a room you could live in for the rest of your life. A fallout shelter.
Nuclear paranoia at home.
I want to be able to live and be comfy so you don't feel like that you're getting bombed.
And abroad. A Chernobyl survivor finds his voice. That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI.
When death comes, I won't be there.
Stay with us.
In fact, I will not be found anywhere.